From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscowain. One of the issues fueling the Occupy Wall Street movement is college loan forgiveness. No surprise when you consider that more and more young people are graduating college with a degree in one hand and a mountain of debt in the other. Student loan debt is expected to hit the trillion, that's trillion with a T, mark this year, and that's more than Americans owe on their credit cards. Some analysts even predict that this will be the next subprime mortgage crisis in its effect on the national economy. In response, the Obama administration has issued an executive order designed to provide some relief to debt-laden students. How does it work, and who will it help? This hour, we're talking with Ron Lieber of the New York Times. Ron is the Your Money columnist and editor of the Bucks blog for the Times, and the author or co-author of three books, including Taking Time Off, which encourages young adults to take a year off before or during their college career. Ron, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks for having me on.
And we're also talking with Pauline Abernathy. Pauline oversees national policy and advocacy strategy for the Institute for College Access and Success, an independent nonprofit that works to make higher education more accessible to people of all backgrounds. Pauline, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning.
Well, so Pauline, let me start with you. You are certainly, both of you are immersed in this. What are you seeing? You're helping college students navigate this kind of thing and figure out what's what in terms of debts and loans and tuition, that sort of thing. Give us a sense of some of the struggles that these young people are up against.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just released a report today that said the average student graduating from a four-year college, public or nonprofit, graduates now with $25,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. And that's a significant amount of money that will certainly affect their decisions about careers and life and getting married, starting their own family, saving for their own children's right. college. On the other hand, if those debt loans are federal student loans, there are a host of different repayment options that can make sure that the monthly payments will be manageable.
Yeah. Well, you brought up a couple of things that I want to circle back to there. Ron, I want to bring you in at this point because, as Pauline just said, $25,000 seems to be the average. However, you have written about some young people who are in way over that in terms of their debts. Tell us about some of the more extreme cases that you've written about.
Well, we've seen situations where people are coming out of undergraduate institutions with just a bachelor's degree with $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 in student loan debt, sometimes more than that. And then you'll often see people in situations, say, a recently married couple where, one of them is a doctor and one of them is a lawyer, and, they may be in $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in student loan debt in some of the most extreme cases. And, you may say, right, cry me a river. I mean, these are people who might be able to earn their way out of their debt. But it's a lot to take on at the age of 30 when you'd also like to maybe have a family one day and purchase some real estate and things like that, and you're looking at, $2,000 or $3,000 in debt payments per month.
Well, Ron, I remember reading, and it might have been your blog, about a young lady who said, I have so much debt, she said, I think it was $100,000+, and she said, I'm basically going into any future relationship with a house on my back that we can't even live in.
Yes, we have written about this. And, I think there are some people who feel like they are literally unmarriageable. It is a big disadvantage, coming into a relationship, with six figures in debt that you're bringing to the table. Mm. And, it weighs on people. This is debt that they have chosen to take on, right? So you have to think, and we should probably talk at some point about, what are the choices that people are making and how they're making it. But, you wake up one day, having acquired that bachelor's degree that you had hoped to get or the graduate degree, but then you're in a situation where you have, a high five-figure amount of debt or a six-figure amount of debt, and those payments become very complicated to make, especially at a time like this when you can't always get the job that you thought that you were going to be able to get when you invested the time and decided to take out the loans to get the degree.
Well, that was my next point, Ron, that these kids are coming into a job market that's so tight. And you read these horror stories about kids with $50,000 in debt who are making $9.50 an hour, working in a restaurant or something because they can't get a job in their chosen field.
Right. I mean, that's a big part of what's going on right now. You know, it's not to say that people should not go to college. I mean, people who do go to college and get degrees earn far more than people who don't in most instances. But the people who are graduating now have the bad luck to be graduating into a particularly difficult economy. Now, you know, it's important to remember, right, that this too shall pass, right? The economy will eventually improve. We'll return to, you know, a period or a phase when most people who want to get jobs will be able to get them. But in the meantime, it's a very difficult environment for somebody who has loans coming due, particularly these private loans, the loans that don't have the same kind of flexibility that most of the federal loans do. It's just a tough spot to be in right now.
Well, Pauline, two things. One, how does this happen? How are these kids and their parents, who I would think are co-signing for these loans, how are people getting themselves in this much debt to begin with? I mean, even $25,000 is a pretty big number.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've sent conflicting messages. On the one hand, we say college is the best investment you can make in your life. Your earnings will be higher for the rest of your life, and so don't worry about how much you borrow. And, you know, it is still, on average, the best investment you can make, while the unemployment rate for young college grads is now at the highest ever at 9%. It's still less than half what it is for Americans who have just a high school diploma of that age, where it's tops 20%.
Wow.
So it's still a good investment, but it does make a difference where you go to school and how you borrow, whether you take on federal loans or also borrow risky private loans.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because there is an important distinction to be made between the federal loans and the private loans. And from what I understand, you've got some of these kids who are either just opting for the private or they're exhausting their federal loans and then adding on to that the private. So
right.
Tell us, what's the difference and what do we need to know when we're looking at these kinds of loans?
Right. So federal loans are a much safer, more affordable way to pay for college and should be exhausted before one even considers taking out a risky private student loan. On private loans, they're much like paying for college on a credit card. The interest rates are typically variable, and you've got very few repayment options if you lose your job, your income drops. Whereas with federal student loans, you can get economic hardship deferment and not pay your loans while you're unemployed. You can go into things like income-based repayment and pay as a share of your income. So if your income is low, you may pay nothing at all. As it rises, you pay more, but they never go above an unmanageable level of monthly payments.
And is it $31,000? Is that the cap for a federal loan?
It varies based on whether you're a dependent or independent student, but it is for a dependent student, so for most younger students, $31,000. But for those who are independent, 24 or older, it's up to $57,500.
Wow.
And even the $31,000 limit can be raised if one's parents apply for a parent loan and is turned down, then the student can borrow up to $57,000 themselves. So there's a lot there. The other point I'd make is that while our report documents that the average amount of loan debt is $25,000 now, that's only for the two-thirds of students who actually take out loans. Another third are graduating with no loans. And so it really underscores that it is still possible, depending on where you go, to graduate without debt. And it's important to compare your college options, because some schools are your chances of borrowing, of graduating with high debt, are much higher than at others.
Yeah. Ron, you and others have made some really interesting comparisons to the subprime mortgage crisis. And you've talked about how you've got these financial aid officers who are probably best positioned to see trouble coming down the road, who may be, you know, encouraging students to take out some of these private loans, having exhausted the federal ones, with no idea whether these students can repay the loans, kind of like the subprime crisis. Tell us a little bit more about that, because there are some very interesting comparisons there.
Right. Well, you know, it is possible to take that comparison too far, right? I mean, I don't think if the student loan problem is in fact a bubble, I don't think it's going to bring down our entire economy the way that the subprime bubble did. But the thing to remember about the private student loans in particular, which is what get a lot of undergraduates into trouble, is that those rates, as Pauline mentioned, do tend to be variable, and right now they're pretty low. But you know, if we see a change in you know, the economic environment that causes interest rates to rise very quickly, and that sort of thing does tend to happen, you know, when the phases of the economy change, people are going to be paying a lot more for those loans. And you know, we may see you know, historically high levels of default. We may see you know, default rates explode on those private loans. You know, it does have the potential to cause a lot of problems for some of the bigger student loan companies. So, you know, that's where the comparison lies. You know, I think, you know, one thing that could happen as a result, and, you know, we're not going to see this in the next couple of years, but if I was a for-profit college that was, you know, relying a lot on private student loans, or if I was a second or third tier, you know, four-year university that, you know, costs $50,000 or $60,000 each year, all in, including tuition and room and board, you know, I'd be very worried right now. You know, I think if we do see incredibly high level of defaults in the next 5 to 10 years, people are going to become much more reluctant on the way in to take on, you know, this kind of level of debt, to sign up for this kind of level of debt, and they're only going to be worth it. They're only going to be willing to do it for schools that are perceived as being worth it. So, you know, I'd be very worried if I was one of those schools. You know, if we see any kind of sort of systemic impact, I think it will be, you know, some of these expensive schools that don't provide very much value, whether for-profit or non-profit, literally going out of business and not having enough students in, you know, 10 or 15 years.
Yeah. And Pauline, that's exactly what some of these institutions are seeing now. They are seeing rising default rates already with a lot of students, correct?
Absolutely, particularly in the for-profit college sector, where the default rates are over 20%, so more than one in five students is defaulting within 3 years of leaving the college.
Yeah. And what are the consequences for the student?
They are very, very serious. Defaulting on a loan really plays havoc with your credit record, which can make it difficult to increasingly get a job, because more and more employers are doing credit checks, also to rent an apartment, to buy a home. It also makes it impossible to go back to school and get federal student loans and Pell Grants if you're still in default on your federal student loan. And on federal loans also, the government will collect on those loans even if it takes a lifetime. They'll garnish your wages, your tax refunds, and even go after your Social Security if you still have debt at that point. Likewise, one thing that makes this different from mortgage debt is both private student loans and federal student loans are currently not dischargeable in bankruptcy. So even if one goes to the extreme of having to file for bankruptcy, those loan debts will still be there.
So you can't walk away from this. Like some people have walked away from a house, perhaps, from a mortgage debt. This is something that it's very, very difficult to get out of once you're in it.
That's right.
Yeah. We are talking about college debt and how it's expected to surpass the $1 trillion mark this year. When we come back, we'll talk about President Obama's debt relief plan, how it works and who it's going to help. We also welcome your calls and your stories. Perhaps you're living this right now. We'd love to hear from you when Radio Times comes back right after this.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation works to advance economic opportunity in southeastern Pennsylvania. It supports nonprofits that develop workplace skills, teach financial literacy, help new arrivals, and sustain those undergoing tough times. The Foundation can help you make a difference for such nonprofits today and forever. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
From Public Radio International, I'm Ray Suarez. Whether you're eyeballing foreign markets for signs your 401k might take another hit, or wondering when and how the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan might end, what happens beyond America's shores will affect your life over the next 4 years. On the next America Abroad, Election 2012, Voters and Foreign Policy.
Tomorrow night at 11 on WHYY.
ThreeGreatSchools.org supports WHYY. The Haverford School, the Agnes Irwin School, and the Baldwin School. This mainline trio of single-sex college preparatory day schools are dedicated to leveraging what other schools cannot, the distinct ways boys and girls think and learn. Open house dates from October 23rd through November 2nd. Details at ThreeGreatSchools.org. Three Great Schools, leading the way in single-sex education.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about college debt, and no doubt many of you who are listening can relate to that. It's expected to hit the $1 trillion mark this year, more than Americans owe on their credit cards. It is a huge concern for many, many people and potentially for the economy at large. We're talking with a couple of guests. We've got Ron Lieber from the New York Times. He is the Your Money columnist there and editor of the Bucks blog for the Times. We're also talking with Pauline Abernathy, who oversees national policy and advocacy strategy for the Institute for College Access and Success. It's a nonprofit that works to make higher education more accessible to everyone. We left off and we were talking about, or about to talk about, the plan that President Obama recently signed into action. And let me just take a moment and invite our listeners to join us in this conversation. We'd love to hear your stories. Perhaps you're living this right now. You've got a college debt story that you can share with us, and we'd love to hear that. We must warn you that we're not able to answer your personal loan questions, but certainly we would love to hear your stories. So join us in the conversation. The number is 888-477-9499, talking about college debt. And not so long ago, President Obama signed an executive order that is designed to provide some relief, Pauline, for these students who are amassing these large amounts of debt. Tell us what it entails. How does it work?
Mm-hmm. Well, he made three announcements. One is that for about 6 million student loan borrowers who currently have two different types of federal student loans, they can consolidate them and get an interest on a break on their interest rates. Mm-hmm. And that way, because they're consolidated, they only have to pay one check a month rather than send multiple checks right. to multiple lenders. So it simplifies things in addition to reducing the interest rate. Second, he announced that he is going to move forward in making the income-based repayment program that exists today that allows borrowers to repay their loans as a share of their income to provide even more relief under that program for recent college graduates. And then third, the administration has launched a campaign to make more borrowers who are struggling with their loan payments today aware of income-based repayment and how it can help reduce their monthly payments, in some cases by hundreds of dollars
wow.
a month.
So when you talk about reducing their payments, would it be a lower percentage of their income? Would it be figured out that way?
Correct. Exactly. Under a standard repayment plan, it's, you know, they take the amount of the loan and divide it by 10 years, 20 years, mm-hmm. and it's a fixed amount over, and particularly if it's a 10-year payment plan, it can be a very high monthly
yeah.
amount. And what the income-based repayment plan does, it says, let's look at what your debt to is in relation to your income, and let's cap your monthly payments at no more than roughly 10% of your monthly
yeah.
income. And if after 25 years you haven't repaid in full, the balance will be forgiven. Mm-hmm. And what the president said is, under the new, more generous version he's proposing, the payments would be capped at a slightly lower level and forgiven after 20 years rather
yeah.
than 25.
Well, and as someone who helps people navigate these issues, what do you think about the plan?
It absolutely recognizes that, as Ron said, college graduates who are graduating today are graduating into a tough economy, yeah. and so this provides some additional
yeah.
relief for them.
So, Ron, who will be helped by this?
Well, it's a relatively limited number of people, unfortunately. I mean, it's, you know, look, it's a, you know, it could number in the millions, right? I mean, that's how the Obama administration wanted to put it. But, you know, whether people will get the message and understand how much it will help and go through the motions to do it is a whole other question entirely. You know, vis-a-vis the interest rate, you know, reduction upon consolidation, you know, it's not going to amount to much more than, you know, a couple dollars a month or maybe tens mm-hmm. of dollars a month. But, it's a relatively small reduction. You know, that said, consolidating things into one payment makes it easier to keep track of things, makes it maybe less likely that you'll miss a payment, and, you know, that's not nothing, right? You know, as far as the income-based repayment adjustments go, you know, that is more likely to amount to real money. But again, for reasons that are not yet clear, nowhere near as many people have signed up for this income-based repayment as are eligible, despite the best efforts of people like Pauline and her organization and the federal government to get the word out, and people like me to, write about it as much as we can. So, it's not helping as many people as it could. And meanwhile, some of the new adjustments, again, are only for people in certain circumstances or in certain phases of their life. It's not going to solve the larger problem or come close to solving the larger problem. And it's just not clear, given the political stalemate, how much can be done, in Washington to provide any kind of meaningful relief at this particular moment.
And Ron, this is federal loans that we're talking about, right? I mean, if you've got private loans, this isn't going to help you.
Right. This has nothing to do with private loans. There was some confusion about this in the first 24 hours after the news came out because certain news organizations were insistent upon using the term private loan to describe what was going on here, when what they really meant were federal loans that had been issued and were being serviced by banks and not by the federal government's own program to issue loans and service them. And so there's a lot of confusion around that. But yes, this has nothing to do with those private loans that we've been talking about, the ones that tend to be more expensive and have variable interest rates. This does not impact those at all.
So, Pauline, what's required for someone who does qualify and wants to explore this a little bit further? What do you have to do?
They need to call their lender to ask about it. There are also some websites available that have some information, including ours, which is ibrinfo.org. And the Department of Education also has a website where you can use their calculator to estimate what difference it would make for you. But call your lender. That's the first step. And the lender can also walk you through whether you're eligible, how much of a difference it would make.
Yeah. I can't help but think we're really talking to the parents here, because as a parent of a college student, they're not the quickest necessarily to act on these kinds of things. So this is one that the parents really may need to take the first step on. We've got a number of people who would like to talk with you both. So let's go to the phones. We'll start off in Bethlehem, and we'll bring Roy in on our conversation. Hi, Roy. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. I went to an in-state college and ended up graduating with a physics degree. I had scholarships. I landed myself in $35,000 worth of debt. It was in the crossover period between the privatized FAFSA and then the federal FAFSA. Mm-hmm. I ended up I just want to make a point to show how bad this economy is. My professors were telling me that it is so easy to get a job when I entered college. When I left college, it took me 475 resumes to get one interview, and that interview luckily landed me a job.
Wow. And this is in physics, Roy, where you might think that there might be a lot of opportunity, right?
This was an applied physics degree with heavy math based. I graduated with a decent GPA. It wasn't bad at all. I have very technical hand skills. I certified mechanic as well as a physics degree. And as far as manufacturing, I just feel like that should be the demand of this country, but it fell horribly from the time I entered to the time I exited college.
Well, Roy, thank you for sharing your story with us. Pauline, no doubt you hear these kinds of stories all the time.
Absolutely, and they don't always have a happy ending of a good job.
Yeah. Let's stay right here in Philadelphia. We'll go to Tamsin. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi. Your comment or question?
I was calling in because I think I have a problem that probably a lot of women are experiencing, where once I started having children and wasn't able to work, I wasn't able to make student loan payments, and the options for deferment or forbearance are pretty much not that helpful, I guess, especially if you aren't able to make the annual interest payments. So I feel like my debt load has gone almost doubled because I haven't been able to make the annual interest payments on my loans, and I was hoping someone could talk a little bit about that and how that's affecting mothers and their ability to have children, ability to work, and ability to stay out of debt.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We hear people often say that they're delaying getting married, delaying starting a family because they do want to make a dent on their debt. But the what you're describing is clearly also an issue. For people in the collar situation, income-based repayment may be a good option to consider. Again, it really underscores why federal loans are so much more advantageous than private loans because one can opt into income-based repayment and make one's monthly payments more manageable.
Yeah. Ron, I suspect you've heard stories like that as well.
I have, and the problem that comes up in many of these circumstances is that, you know, the other partner in the relationship may well be earning a decent living, and so income-based repayment, you know, they may or may not be eligible. And the other problem with income-based repayment, and I know Pauline will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't believe it accounts for any private loans that people have taken on, right? So if the caller has both private loans and federal loans, even if they can qualify for a break on the federal loans, they've still got these private loan payments to make. And if their income goes to zero or close to it while they're on leave while having children, and their partner's their spouse's income can't cover all of the payments, then they're really in a pickle.
We hear that. Ron's absolutely correct. We hear that all the time from borrowers who have both federal and private loans. They say, my federal loans aren't a problem. I'm in income-based repayment. My payments are manageable. It's my private loans that are really a problem, and there are just very few options for them.
Well, actually, Pauline, it seems like I was reading that a couple of banks, at least, are going to fixed interest rates for college loans, correct? For their private loans still, but the rates are not variable, is my understanding. So does that help?
More of them are offering fixed rates, but they still don't come with any of the consumer protections and repayment options that come with federal student loans, and they certainly don't come with the forgiveness options. So things like the forgiveness after 20 or 25 years, and particularly for federal student loans, there's a new program whereby if you're in income-based repayment for 10 years, making payments on your federal student loans, federal direct student loans, then after 10 years of public service working for any nonprofit or any government agency, after 10 years your balance is forgiven rather than after 20 or 25 years. So it's a very significant benefit, but it's only available for federal loans, and even one has to have federal direct loans. So if one has bank-based federal loans, one needs to consolidate them and transfer them into federal loans for them to be eligible for public service loan forgiveness. And there's information about public service loan forgiveness on ibrinfo.org as well.
Okay. Ron, it sort of begs the question, is it ever a good idea to take out a private loan, or when is it a good idea to do that? Given the fact that, you know, you don't have the protections built in, you may very well have higher interest rates, and it's very difficult to get out of once you're in it.
I think it's hard to make the case that taking out a private loan, at least in the first couple of years of school, is a good idea. I think what people, you know, tend to forget is that, you know, your financial situation may get more complex after year one of school, right? The grant aid that you may be getting as a freshman in college may not continue at all, or it may not continue at the same rate as it did before. If your parents are helping to pay for school, their financial situation may change.
Yeah.
And so then you're in a situation where, you know, you've started school, you feel like it would be crazy to drop out without a degree because of affordability issues, and then you're in the cycle where you just feel like you have to keep borrowing more, and you sort of turn a blind eye to how the totals are growing, and you take the private loans, and then you're in a situation where you have a lot, by the time you're done with school. And so, you know, I would try to avoid them at all costs, at least in the first couple years, and maybe at the end if you need a little more to tide you over to get through graduation. Then maybe it might make sense. But you know where this really takes us to, right? Is the myth that people kind of create them for themselves in their heads when either they're about to start graduate school, or they or their children are about to start their undergraduate programs, and they feel like, well, you know, I should go to the more expensive school. The more expensive school must be better. You know, only the best for my Johnny, only the best for my Susie. You know, come what may, we'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure that that's a practical way to think about this anymore, if it ever was.
Yeah, $100,000 later, that may not seem like such an attractive idea after all, I guess. Let's go back to the phones to Ventnor, and we'll welcome Amanda to Radio Times. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, good morning.
Your comment or question for our guests.
Kind of in the future. I'm graduating with my bachelor's and looking to get a master's degree in the near future. And I was wondering, you know, I had a hard time getting a loan because my parents were supposedly making too much money. But what is my loan or my debt going to, is that going to have an effect on my children being able to get a loan for school in the future?
Good question. Pauline?
So, this is a common misperception about federal student loans, and one of the reasons why people turn to private loans when they could have gotten a federal loan is they think they're not eligible, that they make too much money. And in fact, there is no income limit for federal student loans. So you're eligible regardless of how much you or your parents make. Likewise, your parents are eligible regardless of their income for a Parent PLUS loan. Absolutely, your credit record won't affect your children's eligibility for federal student loans, regardless of your income, you can borrow. And if your parents apply for a parent loan and are turned down, as I mentioned earlier, then the student can borrow more in federal student loans.
Okay. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more question before we take a break. We'll go to Devin and David. Hi, David. Welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, hello. My question is, I'm not a supporter of Ron Paul, but I heard him this last week talk about this issue of student loans, and that one of the problems is we provide, you know, all this access to money, and it enables, you know, the price of college to be so expensive to make it, you know, financially, you know, hard for so many people, and it skews the market. We kind of have the same thing in housing, you know, with this huge housing bubble with, you know, cheap access to money. So it seems to be, you know, a common theme that we don't really address the cost of things, the same in healthcare. And so this issue of you know, student loans, the big part is that, you know, the price is so high.
To begin with. Well, David, thank you for your call. Ron, why is college so expensive anyway?
Well, I mean, this is the, you know, trillion-dollar question when we talk about the debt, you know, crossing the trillion-dollar mark. I mean, it's a classic chicken or egg problem, right? Is the price of school going up because loan availability continues to go up, or are we just, you know, creating higher loan limits to account for the fact that the price of school keeps going higher? You know, I think there are good cases to be made on either side, but, you know, I also think you know, we should keep in mind that, I mean, that there are constraints. Some constraints, at least on borrowing limits, right? It's not like the federal government raises the amount of federal student loans that it will allow people to take out by 5-7% each year, which is the rate at which the colleges are often raising their prices. And I think, you know, after the financial crisis, the private lenders are not going to be making the same amount of loan amounts available, you know, as they did before.
So Ron, I'm going to stop you right there because we have to take a quick break. Hold that thought for me, please.
Okay.
We're going to take a break. We welcome your calls, your college debt stories, when Radio Times comes right back.
Supporting WHYY, Bryn Mawr College welcomes to campus Judith Butler, philosopher and gender theorist, for a series of lectures on Monday, November 7th, 14th, and 21st in Goodhart Hall. As the 2011 Mary Flexner Lecturer, Butler will present her latest scholarship, which will serve as the basis of a book to be published by Harvard Press in 2013. While all seats in Goodhart Hall are reserved, standby seating may be available. Also, live simulcasts of the lectures will take place in the college's Thomas Great Hall. Details at brynmawr.edu.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll speak with the writer-director of Margin Call. David Demby says it's the best film ever made about Wall Street. Also, President Obama says he'll have the last word on the controversial Keystone Pipeline. Protesters are heading to the White House to try to influence his decision. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Neige-Séguin, the next music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducts Italian-inspired classics. Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, Tchaikovsky's Francesca da Rimini, and Respighi's The Pines of Rome, with brass blazing from the four corners of the Kimmel Center. 215-893-1999 for tickets. Online, philorc.org. November 10th, 11th, and 12th. Yannick Neige-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about college debt, and boy, have we hit a nerve, because the phone lines are just lit up and the emails are pouring in as well with lots of questions and stories, because this is quite an issue for so many people. We're talking with Ron Lieber from the New York Times. We're also talking with Pauline Abernathy, who is from the Institute for College Access and Success, and just working our way through some of the issues that young people are facing as they try to pay for their college education and pay off their college education. I'd like to read you an email that came in from Conrad Weiler, associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Temple University, who says, "Great topic, but don't forget the parents who may be paying the loans while their children are struggling to get by, cutting into their own income, sometimes their retirement income. Deferments are helpful, but they are based on the false assumptions that there will not be a long recession and that incomes will continually increase. If education is so important to our national future, as we are continually told, why can corporations discharge employee health care and pensions in bankruptcy, but students cannot discharge debt?" Interesting question, Pauline.
Well, he makes an excellent point. It is actually easier to discharge your credit card debt or your gambling debts in bankruptcy than it is your private student loans. And there's really no reason for them to be treated any differently than any other type of consumer debt. And there are bills pending in Congress to change the treatment and make them like other consumer debt, so that if you need to, they are dischargeable.
Yeah. And Ron, I apologize, because you had been talking about college debt when we left off for the break, and why is college so expensive? I want you to finish that thought, and then if you've got anything to add to what Pauline has said about this question about why can we not discharge this type of debt and yet other debts like gambling, we can.
Yeah, I mean, there's no good answer to the question about discharging the debts. It's hard to argue that it makes a ton of sense that they should be treated differently. There was this theory floating around, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, when the rules changed at various points and got tighter and tighter, that a whole bunch of 18-year-olds would sort of scheme to borrow a bunch of money, get their degrees, and then immediately file for bankruptcy upon graduation. There was no proof that that was ever going on, or that any conspiracy existed among mobs of people to do something like that, and yet we have these laws. It is a little baffling. As far as the price of the situation goes, I mean, one way to think about this, right, is that it's just a it's a supply and demand issue. If people continue to pay the price, colleges will continue to raise the prices. Availability of loans or not, at the end of the day, there's a basic decision that has to be made, among students and especially, among their parents, which is, am I going to borrow this amount of money and take on real risk that our family will struggle to pay it back over a period of decades in order to get this degree, or are we going to try and take a more strategic approach to this? Are we going to have the kid go to community college for 2 years for, close to nothing while living at home, and then go to, the best branch of the state university for another 2 years at a relatively low price, so that they will not graduate with more than $15,000 or $20,000 of debt. You know, that may have to be good enough for much larger groups of people.
And you know, Ron, that can be such a tough sell, at least here in the United States, where you know we set our sights on we want to go to this school. You pick out your dream school, you know, aim for that, and to hear your parents say, sorry, we're going the community college route. That's a tough sell for a lot of folks, even for some parents who feel that somehow it's just not the same experience. They want their children to be on the big campus and all of that. Tough sell?
Well, you know, it may be a tough sell, or you can try and think about it this way, right? I mean, you can be a big fish in a small pond. You can be a shining star at the community college. There are incredibly, committed teachers at institutions of all sizes, at all ranks, who are willing to take you in. There are honors colleges at many community colleges. Certainly, most of the best state university systems are no slouches themselves. Again, you know, committed teachers, the possibility to take an honors curriculum to do very well, and you know, to graduate as a superstar from there is no small thing. And I don't think people should feel like they're sacrificing to have done that instead of going to some second or tier private university that's going to leave you more than $100,000 in debt. And by the way, you know, the really good private schools, most of them have big enough endowments where you're probably not going to need to take out more than $25,000 or $30,000 in student loans, and that at least is somewhat manageable.
Yeah, and I was just going to add on what Ron just said, that even among the high sticker price colleges, that's not necessarily what you're going to pay. There are some very high sticker price colleges that are actually very affordable. And right here in the Delaware Valley, we've got three colleges that have pledged to either have their students graduate without any loans or to limit their loans. And they have high sticker prices, but it's really important to look beyond the sticker price and look at what it's actually going to cost you. Sometimes you can go to these very high price schools but pay a low price.
Yeah, so you really have to do due diligence and check around.
Absolutely, and there are new tools that are now required to be on every college website called a net price calculator that allows you to start to get a sense for how much you will actually pay.
Yeah, which is very, very important. Lots of phone calls right here in Philadelphia. We'll go to Berwyn, I'm sorry. I'm not sure if I'm saying your name correctly, but I want to welcome you to Radio Times.
Hello, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, according to statistics, it takes the average student about age 33 who borrows money for college to repay loans and recoup funds lost from not working for those 4 years. Just like that other caller said, it's a vicious cycle. There are a lot of people out there that simply aren't cut out for college, but all the blue-collar jobs just about have been phased out of the market, and everything is high-tech, and it's almost a must to get a college degree. A lot of the jobs that are in that job market require at least 2-year degrees, a college education of some kind, and I think that's very unfair. And what President Obama wants to do is he wants to set a national goal for the United States to have the world's highest college education rate by the end of the decade, and I think that's a big mistake due to the fact that people simply can't afford it, and some people are just not academically college material.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for your call. Pauline, interesting point, and President Obama has set that goal of increasing pretty dramatically the number of college graduates. Are we heading toward having a whole lot of really smart people who are also broke?
Well, I mean, it's not just the president's goal. The economy is demanding it. Yeah. There are predictions that we're going to have a shortage of people with the skills needed for the jobs that we have. So the economy is really driving the need, and on balance, people will be able to repay their loans, and the college degree will raise their earnings significantly. Hmm. It still is one of the best investments you can make on average.
You're still coming out ahead for the most
part.
On
average.
Yeah. Well, we'll stay in Philadelphia. We'll talk with Alexis. Welcome, Alexis, to Radio Times.
Good morning. I graduated with close to $100,000 of federal and private loans. And last year I did enroll in the IBR plan, but I was warned that if I do eventually end up making more money, I can be kicked off the plan for, you know, making as little as $50,000 a year. And then I'm responsible for paying the entire debt in a shorter amount of time.
Hmm. Good question, Pauline.
No one is ever kicked out of IBR for their income going too high, but it's true that your payments will rise to a higher level, and you may choose to, if your income really does rise that high where the burden of the payments is not high enough, you may want to change out of IBR and switch into another plan that would extend your payments over a longer period of time. So that will still be an option for you.
Thank you so much, Alexis, for your call. Hope that's helpful to you. We also have an email here that came in from Lutheran Theological Seminary from Dr. Richard Stewart. And the question is, how does the president's executive order help or not help recent graduates who are already underwater with high repayments and salaries that do not cover debt and living expenses? Ron, what do you say to that?
I'm not sure, you know, again, as we talked about before, that this moves the needle all that much for recent graduates, right? It helps some people who are currently in school, and it may, again, help them in some way, shape, or form with the, eligibility for the income-based repayment. But, again, you know, the thing, you know, much depends on their circumstances and when they took out which loans and, you know, are they still in school or not. So you really need to check the website for the Education Department that's made all of that clear. It's not completely clear from this person who emailed whether they're eligible or not. Yeah. But, this is not going to, wave away the debt or even the majority of the debt for anybody, right? I mean, this helps a little bit, but it's not something that's going to, solve the problem in any kind of big way for most individuals.
Hmm. We'll go to Bryn Mawr next and welcome Greg to Radio Times. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
Your comment or question for our guests.
Can you tell me if there are any options for people who have student loans and then become permanently disabled?
Hmm.
Yes, there are. This is, again, another difference between federal and private student loans. With federal student loans, if you are permanently disabled, you can get your loans discharged. So you should contact your lender and inquire about that. And it's actually one of the areas where the administration is just proposing to change the regs to make it easier for people who are truly permanently disabled to get their loans discharged.
Wow. Well, your question was right on time, Greg. Hope that's helpful. Thank you for calling. We'll go to Philadelphia and welcome David to our conversation. Hi, David.
Hi. I have recently left a for-profit institution as a faculty member. And, I've seen since I entered the industry 5 years ago, the standards for accepting students into the programs really decreased, so that now virtually everybody gets in, and an incredible high number of the students really shouldn't have been allowed into the first place. This is actually an art program, but they're going to graduate. They're very unlikely to get jobs in the industry, and I really fear that we're creating a generation of students that are going to be in debt and going to have to look for a career outside of their chosen field of study. And whether, you know, there's a difference between a for-profit institution, which is an online one like I used to work at, where they just let an unlimited number of students in, whereas, you know, a Harvard or something like that has a limit on the number of students that they accept each year, and so they're accepting theoretically the best, you know, X number of students that they can allow in, whereas a for-profit online institution is just accepting as many students as apply, because they don't have those limitations. And I was wondering whether we should, is there anything in the pipeline that the federal government's going to step in and investigate what's going on at some of these for-profit institutions, and whether they're doing a service to students allowing virtually anyone into these programs.
Well, thanks, David, for your call. Ron, what do you say?
Well, there are some efforts at work in Washington to create new rules around the access to federal student loans for-profit institutions whose graduates are not, working or not working in their field of study within a certain amount of time after they finish. And, I think it's possible that large numbers of those for-profit institutions will no longer have access to the federal aid program, the federal student loan program, if those rules are implemented, at some point soon, which may well be why they're fighting the regulations and their lobbyists are fighting the regulations so hard.
Yeah. Well, in our last few minutes, I want to talk about how people can educate themselves about this and really create a situation for themselves where they can minimize their debt. Pauline, what do you suggest for someone who maybe is in college, about to go to college, parents who are listening? Where do they need to go to really get a good understanding of how to do all this?
Mm-hmm. The Department of Education has a website called College Navigator, and one can look up key facts about any college, including their default rates, how much students borrow, what the chances of graduating are. All that is on collegenavigator.gov. So that's one place to turn. Another is these net price calculators that the schools are starting to put out. And if a college is encouraging you to take out private loans in order to attend, that's a red flag and a good sign that you should keep looking, because you'll have other options where you won't need to take out a private student loan. And certainly for any college that is pressuring you to sign up or sign up quickly, which typically happens with the for-profit colleges in particular, that also is a red flag. No one should be pressuring you to make a decision like this quickly. And if they are, that's a red flag. And again, really is a sign to keep looking.
Yeah. Ron, what do you suggest?
I think you need to try and run some basic numbers. Look at the debt that you'll need to take out in the first year, and then multiply that times 4 years to finish if it's an undergraduate program, or 5 years if it might take you 5 years, which it does for a lot of people. Assume that the amount will go up by 5 or 10% at least each year, the amount of debt that you'll need to take on. Add that up. Use one of the calculators that Pauline mentioned to figure out what your monthly payment would be upon graduation, and then try and figure out what it would be like to try and make that payment on $50,000 a year in salary, or $30,000 a year in salary, or $15,000 a year in salary. And then ask yourself, is this really worth it to me, or that much more worth that much more to me than it would to go to an institution that is asking me to borrow much less?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you for helping us understand these issues, and there are some very, very important distinctions that people do need to be aware of. Ron Lieber, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times. Pauline Abernathy, it was great having you with us as well, and just helping us to understand how we can minimize our debt, because it surely is a big issue. We thank you both for being with us. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscone.